If you will, turn with me to 1 Peter chapter 9, verses 19 through 21. Again, that is 1 Peter chapter 2, verses 19 through 21. For this is a gracious thing, when mindful of God, one endures sorrows while suffering unjustly. For what credit is it if when you sin and are beaten for it, you endure? But if when you do good and suffer for it, you endure, this is a gracious thing in the sight of God. For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example, so that you might follow in his steps.
It is very nice to see everybody here this morning. I know that we have a few visitors with us today, and I'm encouraged by your presence. If you have any questions about our congregation, or if you'd like to learn more about the Bible, then we would love to sit down and have a good conversation with you about those things. We hope that you feel welcome here and that you've been warmly greeted by one of our members. If not, then please stick around for a little while after our worship service and give us an opportunity to get to know you and find out what brought you here today. If you have a spiritual need, we hope that we can play some small part in meeting that spiritual need in your life. So please, give us that opportunity. We'd love to help you grow closer to Jesus Christ in whatever way that we can. If you're tuning in online, we're very thankful for that as well. We have a lot of other material online. We have plenty of stuff on our website or our YouTube channel. Please reach out to us in some way. Send us an email, give us a phone call, reach out to us through social media, and we'd love to find out, again, what kind of spiritual need you have. To all of our members who are out there live stream, thank you. Thank you so much for live streaming today. We're encouraged by that. We ask that you continue to do that, that you continue to engage with this congregation and participate in whatever way that you're able to, in whatever way you're comfortable with, so that we don't lose touch. We're going to get through this together. I say that every single week, I think, as if I'm so naive that, like, maybe this is the last week and coronavirus is going away. You never know. You never know what Monday might bring. But, I'd rather go through life being kind of naive and optimistic about things than just becoming cynical and bitter about life. So I guess if those are your only two options, you know what kind of person I am. Which leads to our word of the day. Grit is one of those really interesting words. It can go by many other names. We hear it called determination or resilience or fortitude, endurance, perseverance. Grit is one of my favorite words because it sounds exactly like what it is. You know, there are words like that, like the word sluggard from the book of Proverbs. The word sluggard can only have one definition, right? It sounds exactly like what its definition is. And grit is one of those words as well. It's got a lot of hard sounds. It's got an R in it and a T at the end of it. It's grit. True Grit, good movie. Good movie. Not Jeff Bridges and John Wayne's third best movies. But the thing about grit is, you don't get anything without a little bit of hard work in life. At least the best things in life, the most valuable things in life, tend to take a lot of hard work. Take pearls, for example. Now, where do pearls come from? The jewelry store, of course, right? Pearls come from the jewelry store. But really, before they get to the jewelry store, it's an interesting process of how pearls are formed. First of all, here's your lesson about pearls and mollusks, because you came to church today to learn about clams and oysters. Any mollusk that's housed within a shell has the ability to produce pearls. I find that really interesting. Normally we think of oysters as being the things that produce pearls, but really that would include snails, clams, mussels, as well as oysters. Any one of them can produce pearls. The formation of these precious gems begins underwater when the mussel, the oyster, the snail, whatever, becomes irritated by something. and is disrupted. Perhaps it's sand or a piece of grit or rock or even bacteria that enters into its shell. Now, the oyster responds to this irritant by releasing a protective goo as a defense mechanism. And this goo, which is called nacre, is both lighter and stronger than concrete. And over several years, thousands and thousands of layers of nacre build up to create a smooth, beautiful pearl. The thicker the nacre, the more bright and shiny the pearl becomes. Now, pearls are beautiful. Pearls are expensive. I think pearls hold a lot of sentimental value for us. But I guess the next time you're kind of, you know, playing with the pearls dangling from your neck, remember, that's just oyster boogers. That one is for the kids. That's for the kids, okay? And that's all they're going to remember from this lesson, too. But the fact is that you don't get a pearl unless there's been some grit. And that's one of those great ironies, isn't it, with a pearl, that the only reason that pearl exists is because that oyster had to go through some kind of irritating process, that something came into its life that wasn't supposed to be there, that it didn't plan on being there, that's causing it to be irritated, but then something that we deem as very valuable comes out of that experience. Have your Bibles up into Hebrews chapter 10, verses 32 through 39. Hebrews chapter 10. And you're all so relieved that we're finally getting to a Bible verse. Hebrews chapter 10, notice here in verse 32. But remember the former days when, after being enlightened, you endured a great conflict of sufferings, partly by being made a public spectacle through reproaches and tribulations, and partly by becoming sharers with those who were so treated. For you showed sympathy to prisoners. You accepted joyfully the seizure of your property, knowing that you have for yourselves a better possession and an abiding one. And I thank goodness that we have not reached that point of persecution. But are you prepared for that? Are you prepared to endure the same sufferings that Christians have in generations past? The writer of Hebrews is applauding these Christians because he said, not only were you there to support prisoners and those who were suffering, but you are willing to throw your lot in with them as well and suffer the same fate. He goes on in verse 35 to say, therefore, do not throw away your confidence, which has such a great reward, for you have need of endurance, or grit, as we might call it, so that when you have done the will of God, you may receive what was promised. For yet in a very little while, and he's quoting from the book of Habakkuk here, he who is coming will come and will not delay, but my righteous one shall live by faith. And if he shrinks back, my soul has no pleasure in him. But he ends the chapter in verse 39 by saying, but we are not of those who shrink back to destruction, but of those who have faith to the preserving of the soul. In this scripture, it said that we have need of endurance. And this comes from the fact that life isn't easy. Very few things in life really are. And almost nothing that's truly worth it is easy. Even our most basic fundamental needs are often only met through intense effort. The only reason you can pay your mortgage is because you put the hours in at your job this week. And imagine what it must have been like for human beings thousands of years ago who didn't have any kind of security around them. Imagine what it would be like only a few generations ago when you couldn't just go to a grocery store and get any food that you needed. Where you could just flick a switch and the lights would turn on. Where you could just push a button and you'd be warmer or colder and find the perfect temperature for sleeping at night. Imagine what it's been like for most of humanity, for most of human history, where just to eat and be warm and feel safe, you had to put incredible effort into that. Humans needed grit. And I believe that grit is a divine quality. But why do so few of us possess it? Many of us struggle with self-doubt. We don't believe that we can do it, that we're capable of doing it. We struggle with weaknesses, with self-pity, and a lack of resolve when the going gets tough. Who were the supposed failures of the Bible? Who were the people who refused to quit when they were not immediately successful at something? In other words, who were the people in the Bible who had grit. Take Paul, for example. It says in Acts chapter 14 that Paul was stoned in a town called Lystra, and yet he got back up and moved on. It almost seems miraculous the way that he responds to that stoning in Acts chapter 14, verses 19 through 22. They leave him for dead, and he just kind of pops back up and says, "Well, I guess we better go back to the city now." He even comes back to Lystra sometime later in a future chapter. It might have been tempting for some of Paul's detractors and enemies to point to all of his setbacks and assume that he was some kind of blundering figure. He almost speaks with pride, if we can use such a term, in 2 Corinthians chapter 11 and verse 23 and onward. He talks about all the times that he'd been shipwrecked and stoned and beaten and left for dead. Like, that's not a list of someone who's had success. That sounds like a list of someone who's constantly failing at life. Do any of us take pride in the number of times that we've been fired from a job? The number of times our car has broken down on the side of the freeway? The number of times we forgot how to tie a shoe or tie a knot? Do any of us take pride in the number of times that we've stepped on a pair of glasses or lost our keys or broken our cell phone by dropping it on the concrete? And yet here's Paul in 2 Corinthians 11 going on and on and on about, I've been beaten, I've been left for dead, I've been shipwrecked, I've been stoned, I've been abandoned, I've been hated by people. And he goes on in the next chapter to say, all of it boils down to, when I am weak, then I am strong, because I only find true strength in Jesus Christ. And there were others as well, and we don't have time to talk about all of them. But the Bible is filled with examples of people who displayed grit. Ruth was gritty. When her husband died, and her mother-in-law said, just call me bitter from now on, I give up. Ruth had grit. Because no one was going to feed her for her. Nobody was handing anything to her. She went out and she worked and saved her family, saved her mother-in-law. Joshua had grit. Moses might have been the most gritty character in the entire Bible, save for Jesus himself. Jeremiah had grit for all of his self-pity that he showed at times. Hezekiah, man, that guy had some grit. John, both John the Apostle and John the Baptist, gritty men. Esther showed grit. And what I like about Esther is she was surrounded by luxury, right? She lived in a palace and had everything that she wanted. And yet even in the lap of luxury, there was a moment in her life where she had to stand up for something. And she did. Noah had grit. I think part of the reason why these people had grit is not because everything came easy to them, but because they had their fair share of failure. Failure, after all, is the greatest teacher. One of our favorite shows to watch was Mythbusters on Discovery Channel. And they had a quote on Mythbusters where failure is always an option. And the reason why failure is always an option, especially if you believe in the scientific method, is because failure provides a data point. Even when you fail at something, you've learned something. You have an opportunity to grow. You have a data point that can be put in that helps you eventually find success. And so failure is the greatest of all teachers. In fact, I would call you naive if I can be that blunt. You're naive if you go into any endeavor without anticipating some kind of initial failure or failures along the way before you master a skill or a talent or a job or a career field. Resilience isn't always found in the tasks that are easy, skills that you've already mastered, or avoiding potentially challenging situations. Resilience is found in failure and in applying all of the accompanying lessons. And there's several scriptures up on the screen. We don't have time to look at all of them. I like 2 Thessalonians 3, verse 13. Turn with me in your New Testament to 2 Thessalonians 3. And notice here in verse 13, but as for you, brethren, do not grow weary of doing good. You know what's being implied there? That doing good isn't always easy. Doing good doesn't always come naturally to us either. When you get cut off by somebody on the freeway, you know, someone's like zipping in, you know, in and out of traffic, and they got like I'm not going to make fun of any one car in particular because somebody in here might have that car. Dodge Challenger. But when there's a, you know, when that guy's zipping in between traffic, it's not easy to be nice and polite on the freeway. Sometimes what comes naturally is to not be very nice to people. But don't grow weary of doing good, because more often than not, that's what's natural to us, is to grow weary of it. When a marriage isn't sparkling clean, right? When there are challenges in a marriage and things get hard, if it's financial problems, if it's a spouse dealing with like a pornography issue, I mean, there are moments in a marriage that are just not very fun. Don't grow weary of doing good in that. Time would fail me to talk about how weary it becomes to raise children as well, and they're worth it. Every bit of it, absolutely worth it. I wouldn't trade my life for anybody other's life in the world. But don't grow weary of doing good with your kids. In fact, there's even verses about that. Don't exasperate your children. Don't drive your children away from you. Why? Because that's tempting for us. Matthew chapter 24. And I know that this is within a completely different context. I get that Jesus has a point to Matthew 24 that has a really special application within its context. But I like the way Jesus puts them here. Just to pull a phrase out of this great discourse, Jesus says in verses 12 and 13 of Matthew 24, he says, "And because lawlessness is increased, most people's love will grow cold. But the one who endures to the end, he shall be saved." Again, I think it's people's natural temptation to grow weary of that, for love to grow cold, for commitment to grow cold. And so Jesus says we have to endure. My friends, grit is usually found in ordinary things and not in the extraordinary. Now, I have three quick applications, and the lesson will be yours, that I want to show why grit is usually found in the ordinary and not the extraordinary. Now, here's what I mean by that, just first off, just as an explanation. Gritty people are not necessarily those who will do one great big gesture. Like that, I'm not sure that is true grit. To just in one moment do one big thing and say, "See, I'm a great husband because I did one big gesture. I'm a great wife because I did one big gesture. I'm a good employee because I was finally the one. I cleaned the microwave." I don't think that's true grit, though. True grit is not found in one extraordinary act of heroism. Now, but don't get me wrong. It's important that we rise up in that moment. And when a hero is truly needed, are you going to be that hero and clean the microwave, right? Someone's got to do it, and Jill from accounting isn't going to. She cooks clam chowder in there every day. True grit, though, is found in just ordinary life. The mundane, day to day. It's not whether you can take a bullet for your loved ones. It's, can you sympathize with your loved ones when they've had a bad day? Are you the kind of father or mother that's there? You're helping your kids with their homework. You're talking your teenage kid through maybe a breakup with a boyfriend or something like that. Are you the sort of parent that is, you are there, you are cleaning up after their messes without complaint. You are there, you're putting the lunch boxes in the backpack. As a spouse, you are there for your spouse. When they're crying, when they're happy, when they're broken, when they're built up, when they're succeeding, when they're failing. That is true grit, is can you do the ordinary things, the mundane things, every single day, committed to people, committed to the Lord, committed to the work of the church? That's true grit. So how do we develop this day-to-day, ordinary grit that makes us into very special people? Well, First point is this. Start small. Just start small. Do we get upset by an obstacle that we fail to see the nugget of our wisdom in the circumstance? Like, as you're going through life, maybe you have some problem in your job, or you have a financial speed bump, or there's something that happens in the church where you get your feelings hurt about something, or you misunderstand somebody, or you mishear what somebody says, and you kind of get all bent out of shape over it. Are you getting so upset by this obstacle that you're facing that you're completely blinded to the opportunity that exists in that obstacle? The opportunity to learn and practice and cultivate grit and endurance in your life. I like in Psalm 119, verse 71. Go to the book of Psalms and go to Psalm 119. And in verse 71, he makes an interesting observation here about affliction and the value of being afflicted. He says, "It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I may learn thy statutes." It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I may learn thy statutes. Go to Hebrews chapter 5 in the New Testament. We learn something about Jesus and his grit in Hebrews chapter 5. In Hebrews chapter 5 and verse 8, look what it says here. "Although he was a son, he learned obedience from the things which he suffered. And having been made perfect, he became to all those who obey him the source of eternal salvation." That Jesus learned obedience in the things in which he suffered. Instead of getting angry at that obstacle, sometimes the best thing that we can do is to embrace that obstacle and look for the opportunity that exists within it. Look for the little lesson. Look for the incremental step toward growth or recovery. And maybe it's just in the form of getting up that day. When life is hard, maybe today the big lesson that you need to learn is just to get out of bed. And I'm not unsympathetic, I'm not making fun of anybody, and I'm not joking about this. That sometimes life is so hard that what you just need to do is get up that day. Just get up. Sometimes when work isn't going well, when your job isn't the best thing in the world, and maybe it wasn't what you thought it would be, maybe it wasn't all your dreams come true, maybe you followed a career path and you're 15 years into it and you're going, "Well, at this point I'm too old or too experienced, I can't go back, well, so I'm kind of stuck on this career path." Go to work. Maybe today the way you develop grit is not through some big gesture, but just today, just go to work. Just today, just go to work. Maybe today, to learn grit, you just need to say that next prayer. Just say that next prayer. And it's not going to be Davidic in its beauty. It's not going to be the grandest prayer that's ever been prayed. But just pray that next prayer. Pay the next bill. Find a bill that you can pay, and just pay something. Take that credit card bill and just pay something on it. $20, $30, just pay something. Maybe that's how you learn grit today, is just face your challenge just $20 at a time. Take that phone call. When life has been awkward with somebody, when a relationship is broken down somehow, when a friendship has betrayed you, and you see that person's caller ID coming up on your phone, instead of hitting ignore, maybe today you answer it. Just answer the phone. Go back to school the day after being bullied. That's how you learn grit today. Today, grit. Maybe it just comes in the form of, go back to school. You've been bullied. You've been isolated. Somebody made fun of you for something. Just go back to school. Just start small and let grit cultivate. Let the layers form the pearl. But a second point is, Be willing to do hard things in your life. Don't just always do easy things. Don't just, you know, it would be like the idea if you've been playing the guitar for 20 years or something like that, and then you go to a community college and sign up for, you know, basic guitar 101, right? That doesn't help anybody. That doesn't fix anybody's problems. You know, they'd be like a professional football player from the Titans or something like that going to a high school. And in fact, there was a really funny video one time where Jared Goff put on makeup and got himself all masked up, and he went to like a Division III college and went to try out for their open quarterback competition at a Division III college. And nobody knew that it was Jared Goff. Hilarious video, but, you know, joking aside, do hard things. Like, challenge yourself, man. Don't just settle for easy things or things that come naturally for you. Push yourself and do something different. Now, we've already read Hebrews chapter 5, verses 7 through 9. Go to 1 Peter chapter 2. Go to 1 Peter chapter 2 and notice verses 19 through 25, the way that Jesus embraced hard things and then calls us to follow in His example. For this finds favor, it says, if for the sake of conscience toward God a man bears up under sorrows when suffering unjustly. For what credit is there if, when you sin and are harshly treated, you endure it with patience? But if when you do what is right and suffer for it, you patiently endure it, this finds favor with God. You have been called for this purpose, he says in verse 21. Since Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example for you to follow in his steps. Now it goes on to say here, in verse 22, who committed no sin, nor was any deceit found in his mouth. While being reviled, he did not revile in return. While suffering, he uttered no threats, but he kept entrusting to him who judges righteously. And he himself bore our sins in his body on the cross, that we also might die to sin and live to righteousness. For by his wounds you were healed. You were continually straying like sheep, but now you've returned to the shepherd and guardian of your souls. Follow the example of Jesus and do hard things. Now, certainly Jesus felt vulnerable at times. You see moments in his life, for sure, in the Garden of Gethsemane, where there was a vulnerability there. But he did the hard thing. He did the hard thing. And finally, learn to take your lumps. Approach life with a little bit of humility. And when you're wrong about something, just be wrong. Learn how to be offended by people and to stop caring about it so much. Because you know what? The world's full of people that are going to offend you. The world's full of people that have an opinion that's different than yours. The world's full of people who don't care about your feelings. The world's full of people who are insensitive and rude and terrible drivers and swindlers. The world's full of shifty people. The world is full of selfish people. Just learn to be offended and be okay with it. Learn how to accept criticism from other people. Learn how to let arguments die before they even begin. We need to learn that hours-long arguments on social media just don't produce anything but frustration. We need to stop making excuses for our mistakes when we're wrong about something and simply say, "You're right. I will try to do better next time." We need to stop casting our pearls before swine and let willfully ignorant people just be ignorant. So recognize when it's time to disengage. In Luke chapter 10, we meet a certain lawyer in verse 25 who was outsmarted by Jesus. And the text says there in Luke chapter 10, wishing to justify himself in verse 29. We need to stop trying to justify ourselves. When you get called out by somebody, when you get criticized by somebody, don't let your first response always be, "Yeah, well." Stop trying to justify yourself when you're wrong about something. In 1 Samuel chapter 13, King Saul made excuses. He was confronted about his sin. He said, "Yeah, well, they were doing that, and they were doing that, and if it wasn't for you." And he looked for everybody to blame but himself. Own up to your responsibilities. In Genesis chapter 3, "Hey, Adam, why did you sin?" It was her. "Eve, why did you sin?" It was a snake. Seriously, talking snake. Wouldn't hardly believe it. He started talking right in the tree. Didn't know what to do. "I ate the fruit. Take responsibility for your actions and don't deflect responsibility onto other people. Take the blame and face the music. Ecclesiastes chapter 10 and verse 4. When you are in trouble, when the ruler's temper rises against you, stay at your post, Ecclesiastes 10 says. Stay at your post and take responsibility for what you've done. Take the blame. Compare all of the world's excuse makers and self-defenders to Jesus, who is as silent as a lamb that is being led to slaughter. The grittiest person who has ever walked the face of the earth took death upon himself when he did not deserve it. The grittiest person on the face of the earth would not bruise a tender shoot. The grittiest person on the face of the earth would not speak to his detractors and those defaming him. He would not stoop to their level. The grittiest person on earth treated children gently and kindly and spoke generously to those who sinned against him. The grittiest person on earth literally forgave the people that were crucifying him. The grittiest person on earth was Jesus. And we need to act a whole lot more like him. Now, if you're not a Christian here this morning, you really ought to be. Mark 16, verse 16 explains the gospel in such simple, beautiful terms. Jesus says in that passage, "He who believes and is baptized shall be saved, but he who does not believe shall be condemned." So you have an opportunity right now. Don't delay. Don't put it off till tomorrow. Take care of what you need to take care of today. Whatever spiritual need you have, please let it be known by coming forward as we stand and sing.